Welcome to the Bicycle Media Podcast, a podcast dedicated to the health of the cycling industry.
Not a lot of people had that tone that just said, ride whatever bike you want to ride.
There's a couple of things about building a custom bike.
What these e-bikes can do.
It's quite hard for them to train when they don't know what they're training for.
I started to demystify things.
But if you don't have the right staff, that's game over.
You're not selling at that point, you're educating.
Big thanks to our coffee sponsors, Roasty, for all their support for the podcast. Make sure and check them out at roasty.ca. They've been delivering coffee to Edmontonians and deliver across Canada for orders over $40. Check them out. Big thanks, guys, as always. Welcome back to another episode of the Bicycle Media Podcast. Man, great conversation coming up with the two of the guys here from Specialized Canada. Spoke with a gentleman named Andrew Greger and James Janet, and we talked a little bit about e-bikes, about the app that they have, the Mission Control app, dialing in your experience on an e-bike, as well as their retail training program, Retool Fit, and certainly their stance using Retool data and building female-specific bikes or not, and just went into that decision. So two cool cats from Canada doing great stuff. I'm going to let them dive into it. Here's my conversation with Andrew and James of Specialized Canada.
I feel like I'm on a radio channel today as I'm doing a remote here at United Sport and Cycle. Gentlemen, thanks so much for being with me this afternoon.
No problem.
Thanks for having us.
Cool. Well, let's just dive into this. Andrew, we'll start with yourself. Just to give our listeners that aren't familiar with you or maybe haven't enrolled in SBCU, a little bit about yourself, how long you've been with Specialized and what you do, and just sort of cycling in general.
Sure. No problem. I've been in the bike industry for a while, so I guess about 30 plus years now. I've been with Specialized for the last 22. My major job here is I run the SBCU department, so I do all their retailer training for Canada, whether it's about product, bike fitting, or turbo-related products. And then one of the newest things I'm doing now is every fall I head over to Europe and with the guys from Retool, and we do bike fits for all the pro tour teams. So we do Quickstep, Bowls, and the guys at Bora. So that's pretty sweet.
That sounds like a wicked gig. James.
Keeps me busy.
Yeah. And we're going to talk a little bit more about bike fit and certainly about retailer training, because it is it's very important for the success of the customer experience. James, I'm going to throw this one over to you, just in your role at Specialized Canada.
Sure. So I'm working rider care, which is mostly implicated with warranty related cases. I've been at Specialized for about 3 years now. Prior to that, I've worked at various bike shops, and I have a pretty deep racing history in downhill on the Canadian circuit, World Cup circuit, street races in South America, and so on.
Wow. And they've got you in snowy Canada at times, so that's got to feel fun when you're shoveling snow and thinking about where you've ridden. Andrew, I'm going to throw it over to you, because I want to know just how hands-on you get with retailers, their staff. I've walked by different kiosks and computers here at United Sport and Cycle where I am to see folks digging into product knowledge. But With everything evolving, new technologies coming out, how important and what are some of the benefits you see of really fine-tuned sales staff that know what they're talking about through the SBCU?
That's a great question. Multi-tiered. So just to quickly go over kind of how we do it. So we've got online training with SBCU.com. I'll do store visits throughout the year, or at least I used to. We'll see what happens next year. And then we've got in-house classes here. So I'll do 3-day turbo related classes. There's two levels of those. I'll do fit classes. So there's three levels of 3-day classes of those. And then we'll do general product classes as well, along with management and owner related classes. So it's a pretty broad spectrum of stuff that we do. My big thing is, and as far as I'm concerned, if you don't know what you're talking about, you can't sell it. And two, it's hard to come across as a professional to people who come into your store if you really can't talk confidently about all the products in your store. But really all I care about is they can talk extremely knowledgeably about what I do and what we sell. So I'll go in and I've been to United Cycle multiple times where you are, and spent lots of hours in that boardroom that you're in, teaching all the guys about the new product. So whether it's, you know, the new SL 1.1 motor, or, you know, what we're dealing with the guys at Brose, whether it's how to use mission control, or, you know, anything from, you know, the brand new Ruban Future Shock. So you tailor to what you do. So what I'll teach in BC might not be the same thing as I teach in Ontario, but essentially I try and give each store and each employee as much information as they can really hold, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And just moving into Retool Fit, one of our previous guests, who is again senior sales here at United, Mia Constantino, we talked a lot about fit, which was pretty cool because it is the make or break sometimes for keeping a newer rider on the bike for a long time. And certainly you're fitting the pro teams. What's that like? What's it like fitting athletes where competition and results are so paramount when you're working with those athletes and Retool?
It's, you know, it's a really interesting experience. It's the process is the exact same. So what I taught, what I teach, you know, at retail, and what I teach the staff is the same thing that I'll do with the Pro Tour riders. So, you know, we start with the physical assessment. We'll take a look at them. The one thing I notice is their flexibility is well beyond what would be considered normal for usual people you see coming in retail. So it allows us to make the bikes more aggressive. But, you know, there's another thing. Everyone has a limitation. So we just find that limitation. And then we talk to the team principals, we talk to the trainers and the other support staff to let them know, okay, this is where the rider seems to be having a bit of an issue. And then we go from there. This year we added a new step to it. So there was three parts. So we do the initial fit, then we do some metabolic testing with that position. And then we change a few things and do more metabolic testing. And then we go to the track to do final aero testing on it. So there's more to it than we do at retail, but at the base, it's the same procedure. We just dive into the details a little deeper with those guys.
Yeah, that's got to be the kicker. Is a lot more flexibility, a lot more experience on the bike, and so those subtle nuances, they have a good sense of how that's going to perform in the field. I just think about pro goaltenders. My other vocation is I'm a goalie coach, and when you work with athletes at higher levels, just a slight degree in the change of a goalie glove pocket or the step steel or a sharpening just a slight bit off and that contact point with the ice. Goalies are neurotic. I can imagine pro cyclists are a little bit too.
Oh yeah. It's the end of the world if you do something wrong. They know. The thing is they really do notice it. I mean, it's amazing when we start playing with like with using the Retool system, I can literally see half a degree of change when I move something around. And some of these guys, like, we'll set something up, or we'll take a position that we've created on the move bike and then transfer it over to their regular road bike. And then we'll zin it, we'll check it, make sure everything's set up, and they'll ride it. They'll go, it doesn't quite feel exactly the same. And then you go through the numbers a little deeper and check. It's like, oh, okay, yeah, so we got to do this, or there might be a spacer missing on a pedal or something like that. And these guys can actually feel that, and it almost immediately. So it's really neat to see. And then they go for a ride, and then they're either happy or we need to tweak some more things, or, you know, it's pretty cool. It's when you start changing, like giving them new shoes or new bikes, that things start getting a little exciting. And so we'll see what happens.
And, you know, being technology driven, it has to be comforting to know that you're able to document those subtle changes versus more of a, let's say, an older school analog fit process where things are somewhat eyeballed, or we're using, you know, sort of handheld tools to complete that. You're able to say, well, you know, honestly, this is 2-degree change. You will feel some, but here's how we're going to move forward. So that's pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, it definitely makes the process for me a lot faster, because I can guarantee that once I've checked it, I know it's exactly the same, and then I can move on. It's no longer something that I have to worry about. Now I can just get back to looking with the rider and seeing what we're going to do next.
Cool. Let's dive into to e-bikes. I know this week was a big launch for you guys. So Andrew, I'll throw it to you and we'll loop you in here, James. But Andrew, can you talk a little bit about what you guys launched this week?
Well, we just launched the brand new Vado SL, which is our new, it's the updated version of the original Vado, which would be a commuter style you know, point A to point B bike, but with a flat bar and a kind of more comfortable geometry, more upright geometry. I've had a lot of time to ride this bike. I was one of the range testers that we had around the world. And I can tell you, like, turbo mode, this thing, they'll do 50 kilometers, wind, no wind, hills, no hills. And then sport, you'll get, you know, 60 to 70 kilometers out of it. But in eco mode, you're going all day. It took me 5.5 hours to drain the bike. And we did, I did 135 clicks twice just to double check. And yeah, this thing is, it's amazing. It is so comfortable. It is so light. Like, I live in an upper duplex in Montreal. So, and it's got some steep stairs. I can tell you, you throw it over your shoulder, carry it up like a regular bike. It's absolutely amazing. I'm so excited. And the fun thing is like, I have both. I've got a regular Vado and this one, and I've ridden both back to back. And I'll tell you, like, the new one rides considerably more like a Cirrus X than the original. The original Vado has a bit more heft to it, a bit more weight. It's like driving like a big station wagon versus like a smaller sports car. It's you know, the handling characteristics are good on both. Don't get me wrong, but the other one, and James, I'll be really able to talk to you about this when we're talking about the Levo SL. The whole SL line of bikes with that new motor and internal battery, it's just so much lighter, and it allows us to really bring that bike feel into the electric bike spectrum. And it really doesn't feel like you're riding an electric bike at all. It really doesn't. It just gives you what Mark Cody was saying in our launch video. It just gives you superhero legs. It's amazing.
So, James, you know, in what you do with customers and how you guide them through it and the feedback that you hear, talk a little bit about what excites you in rolling into the office every day and talking about the complete turbo line, because it's fast, it's got great great options for all riders.
Yeah, so what I'll enjoy about talking with the customer or even the retailers about the SL line or any of our e-bikes is just hearing about their experiences and hearing about how people are able to go farther or longer and do rides or get to locations that they wouldn't have been necessarily able to prior to having an electric bike, maybe due to, you know, fitness or time restraints. So hearing people's stories about how now they can go out with their friends, or like you said, maybe going for a 4-hour ride with the wife, if she can't keep up normally, now this is giving access to people to be able to go with their significant other or their gang of friends and keep up with that group. And it's just giving them the experience. And I think it's incredible to hear about these stories and to see what people are able to do now that they have, you know, that extra bit of power to help them out.
Well, and then once the rider becomes more seasoned and they've developed a sense of what they're looking for, now with the Mission Control app, they can custom tune some of that power delivery. Can you guys talk a little bit about that and sort of those real life examples and feedback you've heard?
Sure. So it's great. It's funny. I'm just in the middle of doing a whole bunch of rider facing and retailer facing videos or how to videos on Mission Control, like how you hook it up to your bike and how you use what some of the sliders and things like that do. But there's some really new and cool innovations that we put in, I guess, in February or March, where there's this one thing part of Mission Control. So first and foremost, Mission Control, you link it to your bike, it'll tell you, you know, there's a diagnostic screen that you can see what's going on. If like your bike has an error or whatever, the error code pops up, you push that button and then it'll give you, you know, user you know, step-by-step user instructions on how to deal with it. On top of that, if you phone up your retailer, your retailer can actually go into the data and actually see what's wrong with your bike and then maybe help you out there. So that's one thing it does. But the other thing is you can tailor the bike to exactly what you want to do on which day. So in my case, I've got my Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday setting when I'm commuting. And so I'll set, you know, eco mode, sport mode, and turbo mode all very, very close together. So they'll give me, so there's two sliders. There's rider assistance, which is pretty much how many times you, or it's the multiplier for the amount of force that you put in. And then there's peak power. So that's like putting a limiter on the actual motor itself. So let's just say the motor has like a 500 watt peak power, and then you set the peak power slider to 50%. No matter how hard you pedal, the motor will only give you 250 watts, right? So there's really cool ways of setting that up. So I'll set everything down kind of low, so I get a really, really good workout from Monday to Wednesday or Thursday. But I tell you, Friday, I got a Friday setting that everything is turbo. I'm going to sit on my bike and I'm going to look at my pedals and I'm going to ride home. So there's that functionality of being able to create presets and then name them. So like it works really, really well on the Levos and the Levo SLs because you can actually tune it for actual trail names. Like this trail, I want to have these settings, or this trail, I want to have these things. And James can talk a bit more about that. There's also a cool thing called Smart Control, whereas if my battery, say my battery is only at 50% and I need to do a longer ride, I can go into Smart Control and choose either time, distance, or heart rate, and then say, okay, say if I choose time, I want to ride for an hour and I want to finish with 10% battery life left, and I hit start, the bike will take care of itself. It'll look after the amount of power that's coming out of the battery, et cetera. So at the end of my ride, I'll have the amount of battery life I wanted left. I can do that with distance. And then the new one is heart rate. So there's a lot of people that are saying that, you know, e-bikes are cheating or whatever the case may be. I can set it so that, you know, I pair my heart rate monitor to my phone or to the Mission Control app. It requires a Bluetooth heart rate monitor, not an ANT one, unfortunately. And then from that, I can set it that I want my heart rate to be 140. And the bike will literally turn itself down until my heart rate gets to 140. And then it'll just kind of play with the assistance to keep my heart rate right where I want it to be in whichever either aerobic corridor or a fat burning corridor or wherever heart rate zone I want to be in. The bike will keep me there. And I think that is one of the coolest things. So you can have the bike do the work for you, or you can have the worst workout of your life, like interval style hell, or you can just ride normally. It's entirely up to you. That's why we call it like infinite control. The Mission Control app gives you the ability to do whatever you want with your bike in the palm of your hand. And it's, of course, iOS and Android compatible. And there's cool new updates coming that I can't talk about.
Yeah. And we won't push you into those realms. But, you know, app development on its own, incredibly challenging. So kudos to you guys. I'm just looking at some of the user interface here. Super simple to use, sliders, very basic stuff where you are not getting bombarded if you're not overly technically inclined. But I just want to touch on something, the narrative of e-bikes are cheating. And we have a podcast coming up with a gentleman, you know, who does a little bit of trail maintenance. And certainly within mountain biking, there's a concern that, you know, riders are going to put more stress on the trails. And I don't know if I necessarily see it. I mean, I used to be a fly fisherman. I was terrible at it, but just the thought of, you know, excess fishing, if there was some sort of advanced way to cast a fly with casting assistance, that might be a challenge. But how do you combat the narrative, or how do you reply back to the narrative that e-bikes are cheating? And you guys have done really great with, like you said, the heart rate settings. And then also about excess sort of riding on the trails and excess use of some of those resources.
I mean, I wouldn't necessarily say, well, yes, I guess you can get excess use, as in the fact that you're going to be able to get more riding in than you would with a standard bike due to fitness, but the bike itself isn't going to be damaging the trails more than your normal bike would. So I think that we can throw out the window. And the fact that, you know, I've worked trail crew before at one of the biggest bike parks in the East Coast of Canada, which would be Ski Bromont. And trail maintenance is going to happen whether you're on an e-bike or not. So I don't think that the electric bike is going to damage the trails necessarily. I think it's just giving people access to doing more riding and access to getting to do more trails or different variety of trails easier than they would on your standard bicycle.
One of the other things that we want to note is even a Gen 1 Levo, which is, you know, 4x you as opposed to the SLs, which are 2x you, even a Gen 1 Levo and at full power, right? Even or a Gen 2 Levo in shuttle mode, right? Is less wattage at the wheel than you would see by a pro rider, right? So, like, I understand it because what people do is they think this is cheating. They're thinking about they see the e-bikes as some of the. I mean, I've seen some out in Edmonton on my travels there. These wildly crazy e-motorcycles, really, with throttles and stuff like that. Like, that's not what we're doing. That's not what we are. We're a class one bike, which means that it's pedal assist only, and the top speed is 32 kilometers an hour in Canada. That's it. We don't do anything else. Like a class three bike would be pedal assist going to 45 kilometers an hour. That's what they have in the U.S. But the mountain bikes don't do that. That's only the road bikes. And in Europe, they're even slower. I mean, the speed limit in Europe is 25 kilometers an hour for everything. So, you know, what they're doing is they're seeing this. They think they're dirt bikes, and they're not. They're just that extra hand on your back when you're climbing the hill to help you get to the top so you can have a better day. And realistically, you know what the funny thing is? Until the people try it, they have their preconceptions. But once they've ridden one of these things and they see what it is and they feel what the bike feels like and they understand how the power is applied, they're just like, oh, okay. And then the problem goes away. We had the same thing with remember the Parks guys in Canmore. They didn't understand what the e-bikes and stuff like that were. And our rep out there lent them a couple of bikes. They went for rides and they're like, okay, no, this makes perfect sense. This is no more damaging than a regular bike would be. So I think it's just getting more and more people on these things just so they understand and they see what the benefits are. I think that's how we're gonna take care of these the questions that people have, to be perfectly honest.
And I think the questions will diminish and change or be more subtle once the late adopters get on board. I mean, the individual that purely thinks it's throttle based will get on board, and those questions will minimize. Those that are hardcore against it on trails, once they get a feel for it, those questions will minimize quite a bit. The S-Works Turbo Levo SL that's in the shop here getting some customization. It has the range extender added. What kind of serious stoke is that bike owner in for, and the range that he's going to have a little bit extra for?
Okay. The range extender literally gives you an extra 50%. So it's really funny. If you look in the app, once you have the range extender plugged in, your battery life is actually not, it's not 100%. It's 150%. You know, so put it this way, on the Vado SL, like the bike I was just riding, if I'd had a range extender on there when I was doing my eco ride, I would have done 190 kilometers that day or more, right? So it just adds a, so it's really funny because people look at the battery and say, well, it's such a small internal battery at 320 watts, right? Or the range extender is an extra 160. And by the way, why we came up with the number 160 is that is the largest battery you're allowed to fly with in your carry-on. Just throwing it out there. That's literally what it's there for. And the funny thing is, you can take the internal battery out of the bike and just run it on the range extender itself.
So that makes travel with your e-bike by plane a lot easier. So that way you don't need to have, or with the restrictions, you can pull out the internal battery, which is built into the bike, and just run the range extender. So you'll still get the assistance and be able to fly with your bike and not have to worry about sourcing a battery wherever you're going or wherever you're traveling to.
Yeah. And you can fly with, and you can actually fly with two range extenders. So there you go. But yeah, no, it just adds more. So the bike, say if you take a Gen 2 Levo with a 700 watt hour battery and you take a Levo SL with the internal and a range extender, you're going to get the exact same range. So you're going to get 5 to 5.5 hours of trail riding, like hard trail riding, out of both of those bikes. So it's impressive as hell. Like the guys in the Swiss office, they honestly say you're going to be worn out well before the battery.
Yeah, you're going to need to stop and crush a burger and some fries to keep going afterwards. I like the idea of traveling with batteries. I mean, I think if somebody had a vacation home or, you know, didn't want to risk renting a bike at, you know, they're all inclusive, that might not fit or be what they want, but yet they want to, you know, go shopping, be it Mexico, Dominican Republic, wherever they're going. This is the idea for them. So I want to move things into female-specific products. And we've had an ongoing theme here where we talk to, you know, those in the industry and riders about that. Specialized has noted that they don't necessarily follow that theme of making female-specific products. And I just wanted to know how that has benefited riders, or is it something that, you know, retailers have to navigate, and how you guys do that through some of your retailer education?
So it's okay. There's a bit of a misnomer there. So we actually did designs for women for years and stuff like that. And what we did is when we acquired Retool, what, about 6-7 years ago now, one of the coolest things we got out of that deal was the fit data. So there's been over 40,000 people who've gone through Retool fits that we have data on, and essentially their final position, the, you know, whether they're male, female, how tall they were, and their riding experience. And what we found was that in certain experiences, say road or mountain, trail, mountain, stuff like that, the actual final position between a man and a woman, so essentially what I'm talking about that is where their seat is compared to where their hands are, okay? Mm. That was very, very close depending on experience. So we determined, even though men and women are different sizes and there's issues there, on the bike, it really didn't play out that way. So we were able to say, okay, so we can have a unified platform here, but where there is a morphological difference that requires specific parts that are designed for women, then we will go to the ends of the earth to figure that out. So if you look at women's specific saddles, so we started with, you know, the first one, which was the Dolce, and had the certain cutouts and flared edges and softer foam. And then as we learn more and more and more, we get to, you know, what we've got with a Mimic technology, which is the bleeding edge of science when it comes to like anatomics and supporting a rider to deal with pressures and stuff like that, to make sure that they can be comfortable while riding. From there, you'll have size specific handlebars. You'll have size specific grips with slightly, you know, the grips are thinner to deal with smaller hands. You know, crank arm lengths will be a slightly different, saddle widths, because women's pelvises are on average 1.5 centimeters wider than men for the same height. So, yes, in certain cases, we found that we can blend men's and women's in geometry. So we can share a frame, have a shared platform frame. But after that, wherever there is a place for women's products, we will guarantee you we will be there 100%. So, you know, chamois are different between men's and women's clothing. There's a pile of different things that are there. So, no, we haven't just kind of decided that women aren't worth making stuff for at all. So, no, it's just now we've learned that we don't necessarily have to have men's bikes and women's bikes. We can share the same frame, but just change out some parts.
Yeah, thanks for clarifying the bit of the misnomer. And I like that it comes from those 40,000 Retool Fit data points, because that's super important. You guys are coming at this with a lot of data to prove the decisions made. And I think that's great. We're recording mid-May here, 2020. The retail landscape is certainly changing. Some provinces are opening up retail under modified circumstances. How are your retailers sharing successes that they've had up to now, where it's maybe more sort of bread and butter bikes, or is it, you know, online has just been smashed and they've been pumping orders out the door? Like, what are some of the successes your retailers have shared with you guys so far?
I'd say sales are doing fairly well for the circumstances and what's going on in the world right now. Our retailers are being very creative with the ways and approaches that they're going at selling bikes and doing test rides and finding new and creative ways exactly to facilitate supplying new bikes to the new customer, or even when it comes to taking bikes in for tune-ups and service. I think with what's going on with COVID-19 and stuff, there's been a pretty big influx in people either wanting to upgrade their bikes or just switching from taking your public transit. So whether it's the metro, bus, you know, et cetera, to taking your bicycle, because you can sort of self-isolate and travel and get to point A to point B. So, yeah, I think that's always a good thing.
Great to speak with you both. And certainly down the road, hopefully if you're this neck of the woods, we'll grab a cold one and talk bikes some more.
There you go.
I'm in.
Thank you.
Big thanks to those guys for their time. And definitely look forward to crushing a few miles on some of the specialized bikes that our clients have. Up next, I want to talk wheel building and the mechanic industry. I'm going to do so with Adrian Emilson of Melody Wheels. Really cool guy. I really appreciated his conversation. Just again, his commentary on the industry at large. Again, follow him on social media, Melody Wheels. Check out his website. And yeah, just a really cool guy, man. And I really appreciate the fact that he listens to the podcast too when he's doing his work down in Australia. So hope you guys are doing well, getting some rides out there. It's good that retailers are starting to open up, and some of those that have been restricted in terms of, you know, not being able to train. We had a previous guest, Imogen Cotter, who couldn't go more than 2K from her house, and depending on when you're listening, of course. And big boom in the bike industry. Man, that sub $1,000 bike is just crushed, and the inventory in most shops is out the door. So again, time to move the high-end road bikes, do full suspension e-bikes, all that fun stuff. So a lot of great work coming up with our clients here at Bicycle Media. I mean, we love our podcast, but definitely a lot going on with web development, video production, and so on. So check us out and be sure to visit us and keep tuning into these episodes. Thanks for now.